Good morning. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. I'm Erin Fulton, and joining me in the studio this morning, I have Keith Nitre here to give us a little preview for the talk he'll be giving this Wednesday, January 8th at UAS about an absolutely mind-boggling journey he made 35 years ago this year across the Brooks Range. Keith, thanks for coming in this morning.
Good morning, Erin. How are you?
I'm doing well. I am... truly, my mind has been boggled just with our brief talk before we went on air of the trip you took. So, yeah, in a nutshell, what did you do?
Well, you've heard of the Appalachian Trail and the Continental Divide Trail and the Pacific Crest Trail. Well, many years ago, I was wondering if anyone had ever done the Arctic Divide Trail or if there was such a thing. I never knew that the Brooks Range in Arctic Alaska was actually the northern and westernmost extension of the Continental Divide Trail. And I had already been doing several hundred-mile treks across south-central Alaska, going back and forth to my homestead across the Alaska Ranger, working for the Iditarod. And I just wondered if anyone had done it, and that just stuck with me. Mm. And for 2.5 years, I planned, and I read, and I talked to people, and I thought about it, and I finally got to the point where I studied topographic maps, and I thought, I think I can do it. And then I remember going, oh, crap, now I have to try. You know? And so what it was supposed to be a 6-month, 1,500-mile journey along and through the entire length of the Brooks Range, starting off my dog team in Fort McPherson, going into the Yukon, all the way to Arctic Village, and then hiking all the way to the headwaters of the Noatak River, and then canoeing out the Noatak River. But the best laid plans often gang awry, and what happened was the spring of 89 came a month early. My partner quit in the Yukon for a variety of reasons. And instead of a 6-month trip, it turned out to be a 10-month trip.
And a 10-month trip that was effectively solo when it was supposed to be a partnered gambit.
Right. And also the winter of 89 came a month early. So instead of canoeing out the Noatak River, I got froze out. And I had to walk the last 300 miles out in the middle of winter, during the dead of winter.
My goodness.
So I eventually to get to Kotzebue, yeah.
Yes, for those listening, you can understand why my mind has been boggled on this Monday morning. So this is something that it was just an idea that scratched its way into your head and just couldn't leave. And it's something that you just had to see if it was done. For this whole venture, this is something you've been sharing with a lot of people around the world, or at least around the country. You've been kind of telling this tale.
Right, and it was written up in National Geographic and also a European version, a Greek version of National Geographic. And I've done a lot of slideshows at Smithsonian and things like that in D.C. and all over the country. But I haven't done it in a long, long time. And a lot of people here in Sitka kind of heard about it or knew about it, and they started asking me a couple of months ago, would I consider doing it again? And I thought, well, this is a good time. It's the 35th anniversary of it. And so I'm excited to do this. I only had 6,000 words in the National Geographic magazine, and that was in April 93. So there's a lot of stories that I could never publish or tell. So this presentation that I'll do on Wednesday night will last at least an hour and a half, mm-hmm. and I'll cover a lot of things. I took thousands of photographs, so I'll have almost 180 slides to show that will depict the entire journey, the highs and the lows, plus a lot of stories that'll go along with those pictures.
And yeah, there's one thing to read a journey, but to see it makes it so much more real. Actually get a true idea of what you put yourself in.
It's going to bring back memories. I haven't done this in a long time, and I know that there are certain parts that were very powerful for me. Especially the starvation period towards the end and the frostbite that I had, and dealing with that. But also some wonderful highs, my times living with a native elder in Old Crow in the Utah Territory, or spending time in the villages. I would resupply in the village. I had no airdrops, no radio, no anyone following me. I would only resupply in the villages of Old Crow, Arctic Village, Anaktuvik Pass, Walker Lake, and Noatak. But in each of those villages, I'd spend a couple of weeks learning about the culture, actually getting ready physically and psychologically to go the next 300 miles.
Right.
In one case, I had sprained an ankle, so it took me several weeks to heal that up before I could hike out of there. So living in the communities with the people were also another huge highlight of my journey.
Yeah, so this wasn't, in some ways it was, can I do it? Is this possible? But in other ways it was...
Just for the experience.
The experience of it, which I think is a lot more... I don't know. I think that makes it more special than just a tick mark of saying, look what I've done.
It's one of the reasons why my partner quit. He was very goal-oriented. He was thinking about success and fame afterwards. And when he realized he wasn't up to it, he just psychologically crashed.
Mm.
Where me, it was experience-oriented. And I thought, well, I don't know if I could do it anymore, but I'll go to the next village and reevaluate.
Yeah.
And then, okay, I'll go to the next village and reevaluate. You know, I was up there just because I was doing what I love doing.
Right.
I love spending time out there.
Oh, that's amazing stuff. So as when you're hiking, you said no air support, no food caches to check in.
Correct.
With just these from village to village. What were your packs like?
I
would, 200-300 miles between,
right,
between
resupply. While crossing mountains, yeah.
Yeah.
My pack would usually weigh about 150 or more pounds to start off with, and I had my wolf hybrid dog Smoke with me, a very wonderful dog. He would start off with like 40 pounds of dog food and emergency supplies in his pack. And my whole thing was, it takes a while to get into the psychology of being out in the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first day leaving a village, I'd stumble like maybe a mile and a half from the village because 150-pound pack is pretty heavy, you know.
Yeah.
And then I'd have a really good meal and eat, you know, a couple of pounds, and my dog would eat 2 pounds, you know. And then on the next day, I'd stumble 3 miles. By the time I got down to where my pack was, you know, 100 pounds or so, I'm already 30 miles into the journey. I've got a leg up. Now I'm psyched into it, and I can go. And then the other thing is, my dog, as smart as he was, he never figured out his pack always weighed 40 pounds.
Oh, sweet Smoke. Sweet,
yeah.
Sweet. And that, I guess that also helps. So you had you did have a buddy with you on that whole trip,
A wolf hybrid that I had raised from a four-month-old pup.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been on many adventures with me crossing the Alaska Range several times. And so he was well-versed in long-distance backpacking hiking.
Oh, that's what a good adventure buddy to have with you.
Yeah. Believe me,
I can imagine having, like on those low times, it's
yes.
You need someone to help. Yeah,
that companionship. You know, a lot of
Definitely.
People say, didn't you ever get lonely on that journey? And yet, Smoke was my companion.
Yeah, that's amazing to have. Oh goodness. So, I guess is there any sort of like little teaser or tidbit of a particular moment or story that you might mention that as a teaser for if folks aren't already intrigued by this real life tall tale that you have coming up on Wednesday night?
There's too many. I mean, I had 11 bear encounters. Once I actually charged a bear.
You charged the bear.
I charged a bear.
I was
just tired of dealing with bears. And it was a young male, you know, so it's not today. But my journey is like, in my diary is like, I hate bears. I doubly hate bears. I had 2 charges today. And then the next day is, today I charged a bear, you know. I guess I was getting a little bushy, you know.
Just a smidge.
But, you know, there's so many points like that. And then the low points were the starvation, the frostbite.
Mm-hmm.
I had to do some dental work on an abscessed tooth. That was pretty weird. But, you know, that's what old-timers had to do.
Yeah.
They had to take care of themselves. So, again, that whole psychology of being out there alone, disconnected from the modern world, was just an incredible experience.
Yeah. It's a good reminder that, we do have incredibly abundant modern resources, but it doesn't mean if we don't, it's still in us. It's still, if you put your mind to it, if you really practice, if you are intentional about it, that ability is still lies within
right.
us.
I think
it's
the
not,
word you
we're
use
not,
is practice is important.
Yes.
Because this had been a progression for
yeah,
many,
it's
many
not
years.
Something you can just like, I'll just buy all the right gear and head out there and
right.
it'll
and
be magically
color
work.
Color-coordinated gear, too.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you know. Yes. Got to look good while you're doing it. it's still in there. It's not something that only the unique few can tap into. It's if you really want to find it, I think...
That, yeah,
you
and
probably,
you
can
have
probably
to be really comfortable by being alone.
Mm.
You have to be really comfortable with yourself. you know, there's when I first started long distance treks or isolation caretaking lodges and being alone for months at a time, I literally went through psychological and physical withdrawals. Mm. You know, and you get to a point where, you know, you're only thinking to yourself or talking to yourself, and you ask yourself, you know, how's my life going? And a lot of people realize they're not as good as they could be, you know. And but rather than push through that, they, you know, turn on this TV or crank in the music or go to the bar or something, and they never push through that getting to really know themselves. And out there, you have no one else. You have nowhere else to go. You are stuck with yourself, and you're stuck with your thoughts.
So you better start, becoming a good conversationalist with yourself and really get to those
to believe
parts.
In yourself. Yeah.
And you have to really believe in yourself if you're going to make it 1,500 miles, 2.5 months longer than expected.
I had so much fun. If you could read the scribblings in my diaries, and I also have microcassette recordings of it. I was having fun. I'm laughing. It's beautiful. You know, I'm out there doing what I loved, and there's minor weather things, but you have that anyway. So, but the experience, the things I saw, I walked with 10,000 caribou one day, and they were coming down a valley, and I was going up it. So I just stopped, and I became a human rock in a river of caribou as they float around me.
Wow.
You know, experiences like that. You know, I'm getting all choked up just remembering that feeling.
That's truly, I don't even know if there are words to truly describe that sort of experience. And how else would you have that sort of experience without being able to put yourself in that wonderful situation?
There is a word, and I can't remember, it's an Inuit word, but it means taking extravagant pleasure in being alive. And it's off the tip of my tongue. It's been a while since I've thought of it, but the feeling of yes, life, and to have that surge through your body of awareness and enjoyment and pleasure.
Awesome. Well, you know what? We'll have that word on Wednesday night.
I will have that.
And that. So your retelling of this amazing journey across the Brooks Range, that is this Wednesday at 6:30 p.m., January 8th. At UAS. It's a free talk, though donations will be accepted to help support the Sitka Maritime Heritage Society, where you also help out and work there.
Yeah.
One of your many hats. Well, thank you, Keith Nitre, for coming in and giving us this little teaser about your amazing journey 35 years ago.
Keku and Masicho.
Thanks.